One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
If I was saying I wanted to be penetratively fucked every night of the week, yeah, you can look at me and be like, shut the fuck up. But that's not what I was saying. I think about it often because I'm like, oh my God. Everyone in that room was like, what is wrong with her? Girl, don't lie. And I was so flustered. I was like, no. What I was going to say was... What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the show for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, and co-hosted by Keeper of My Heart, Miss Mango the Gooey Girl, who is asleep on my lap right now, just being the cutest girl I've ever met. We just finished up our first week and some change of being a foster family, and it has been so illuminating and so healing and so fun. I feel like I've learned so much in the past week. And I also feel like I've done a lot of good, like, moving on and healing and processing in the last week. Cats are magical. Cats are beautiful, magical creatures. And I think taking care of young, sick animals just, like, brings a side of me out that I really love. And, that has made me have a really awesome week, honestly, despite how challenging it was. Because I think, you know, through all the good, all the joy and the sweetness and the cuteness, there's also been like a lot of really exhausting moments and like a lot of grossness going on. So we've experienced a range of emotions in my first 10 days of fostering now. And I'm fostering 2 8-week-old kittens. Their names are Roar and Chirp. Though I have not really been calling them their names. I've been calling them variations of their name. Roar became Aurora, became Rora. So now I call her Rora. And then Chirp just became Sherpa somehow. I think it's just because I like vowels at the end. And so Chirp became Chirpa, became Sherpa. And then Roar became Rora, Aurora. I was like, such a royal, elegant name for such a beautiful girl. I love it. So anyways, this is what I've been calling them. But when they came to me last Saturday, so it's been like 10 days that I've had them now. When they came to me last Saturday, they were both pretty sick with just like a case of kitten diarrhea, where basically their butts were just leaking liquid involuntarily. I know it's gross. But this is motherhood, baby. This is what I've been dealing with over the last 10 days. But it was totally involuntary. They wouldn't realize when it was happening. So it was just like, you know, they're tiny. They're literally a pound. So it's not like they're generating a lot of poop, but it's still stuff to clean up and it's coming out of them involuntarily. So that was awesome. And I learned a lot about myself in the process of having to clean up after them and, you know, just make sure, help them in the cleaning up process, because they were definitely struggle bussing it up for the first few days that they were here. Thank God over the last like 72 hours, I haven't had to clean up anything. They're both doing much better now. They have like a renewed sense of energy now that they're not, you know, dealing with all of that. So that's been so fun and so nice to see. They are two of like the sweetest, most friendly girls ever. Like so brave, not afraid of anything. It's so like interesting to see how different they are from how Mango was when she was young. And I didn't know Mango when she was that young. They're baby babies. But they just are so, totally unafraid of anyone. It just seems like they're immediately trusting and they've got like this energy and curiosity about them that is so void of fear that I think is so adorable. Sherpa, my girl Chirp, she is like a sweet heart. She wants to be held. Every time I walk in that bathroom, she's like trying to climb up my leg. She loves just sitting on you and being right next to you. Roar is much more crazy. She's the one that's like bouncing off the walls and trying to fight 24/7. But the best part is that they like influence each other so much. So when Chirp is being more like cutie and cuddly and calm, Roar will mimic her. And then when Roar is going crazy, Chirp will mimic her. But it's so funny watching them like play and fight together because Roar is so much more like energetic and aggressive than Chirp is. And Chirp just sort of gets beat up by her sister. It is very funny though and very sweet. And obviously, since because of the diarrhea, I wasn't introducing them to Mango, and also got to go very slow in that process of introducing cats. And so I let them sort of look at each other. I like open the door up a crack and see how Mango reacted because I didn't want to overwhelm her at all. I'm like, she is my number one priority. Everything I care about in life, she is at the center of. So I was like, let me crack open the door and I'll see if Mango wants to take a peek in. I'm not going to force her to. I'm not going to like, you know, have them hang out together. I'm just going to open the door a crack, sit there with her and let her look at them. And then after we started doing that a few days in a row, Mango would come over to the door when she knew I was inside and start meowing. So I was like, do you want to look at the girls again? And she doesn't really want anything to do with them, but she does like observing them. This is, she's just, I love Mango so much. I feel like she is just like, she has like a piece of my heart just wrapped up inside of her so effortlessly. But Mango's scared of everything. She's scared of her own shadow, and she always has been. She is my anxious girl, my anxious queen. And it's funny because these cats are literally a pound. And they are so small. They are so tiny. They are so harmless. And Mango is like so scared of them. In like a very sweet way. I think she's curious about them and she's very entertained by them. But the second they get too close to her, Mango's like backing away. Mango always has to be the one to make the first move with people as well. Like Mango doesn't want you to come after her and pick her up and like you decide when you're going to be close. Mango wants to decide. Like she will choose you if she wants to choose you, and you just have to let her, because if you start walking around trying to pick her up and like bring her places, she doesn't like that. She just wants to like choose for herself, and she's a very cuddly girl. She will choose the cuddles, but she wants to choose it herself. I think the same is going with the kittens. I did end up introducing them. So the meetings through the door were going well. We did that for a few days, and then I let the girls come out and just start sniffing around, and they were sniffing around and Mango was sniffing around sort of watching them, and they were out here for like an hour or so doing like supervised playtime, and Mango was so, she seemed so entertained by them and so like enthralled. She wasn't bothered by their presence at all. She definitely was like on alert and was watching them and was following them around and like sort of playing with them from a distance. I was using like the cat teaser toy for a while and all three of them were playing together. So I'm like, this is awesome. This is great. They've got like a nice little dynamic going, but also like these two kittens have so much more energy than Mango does. So she's definitely a little overwhelmed by them. And also the kittens are not that interested in Mango, which I think is kind of a good thing, because I think if they were, Mango would be very overwhelmed. She prefers to just sit back and watch them play together, and that's pretty much what they were doing. They weren't really going up to Mango and like trying to get her to play too. She was just also there. But also that made me sad, because I was like, it just like looks like Mango's being left out right now, and that hurts my heart, even though I know she doesn't want to play with them. She would rather just watch them. But anyways, it was the cutest thing ever. So I think we're going to keep doing a little supervised playtime just for a little bit, like an hour every day, and keep seeing how that goes. I don't know. They're going to be here for the next 2 weeks, and then I'm going to Spain. So they will either get adopted before I go to Spain, or they'll go to a different foster once I leave. Which is already, I'm preparing to be sad when they leave, which is like, this was always the plan. I knew that this was what was happening when I accepted to foster. I was like, I've got 3 weeks. The rescue was like, can you foster them for the next 3 weeks? I said, absolutely, yes, I can. And I love them. They're so sweet. I definitely can't have three cats. So it's a definitely no, I will not be adopting them. But yes, it will break my heart to let them go for sure. They're like the sweetest girls ever. And whoever adopts them is going to be very, very lucky. I think they're like the most perfect pair of kittens, and they both bring out a certain side in the other that I just can't get enough of. They're sweetie, sweetie girls. So anyways, that's my long-winded update on becoming a foster parent, having to clean up poop for the last week of my life. New surprises every time I walked into that bathroom. You guys should have smelled what it smelled like in there for the first 3 days. Actually, you shouldn't. I wish that I didn't have to smell what it smelled like for those first 3 days. Now it smells so much better in there, thank God. But it was rough, because also kitten food, like the food that kittens have to eat, smells nasty as it is. So their poops already were going to smell gross simply because of the food they have to eat. But the kitten diarrhea, brutal. But it's been nice to see how Mango is around them. Her calm, anxious self. She's not really interested in all the chaos. She just wants to chill out and watch other people. She's a shy girl. She likes the entertainment, but she doesn't need to be the center of attention. You know, she can be a supporting role to the kittens in their universe. In my universe, you're the starring role, mama. In my universe, you're quite literally the only thing that matters to me. And you know that. You know that, and I know that, and the two of us are just in love. And that's how it is. That is how it freaking is, Mango. I'm getting so excited for Spain, though. I can't believe that it's less than 2 weeks away at this point. This is a Trova trip. For those of you that don't know, I did plan a few like group travel trips last summer, or 2 years ago at this point. I planned the ones for last summer. Last summer, there was a group of 20 of us that went to Italy. And then the following week, there was a group of 20 more of us that went to Greece. Got home from those trips. They just went so well and it was so much fun that I planned another trip to Spain for this summer with 24 of you. I'm so excited. It's always so fun to get to meet you guys in person, but especially to get to like travel together for a week and actually bond and get to know you and facilitate this kind of like group bestie trip, which really is like so fulfilling and rewarding to me. Like, that's why I've been so interested in doing these. That's why I did two of them last year. That's why I'm doing it again this summer, is that like I love connecting people. I love like bringing people somewhere, bringing people together and being like, and now everyone talk and hang out and become best friends. Like, I feel like this is something I do in my real life as well, where I'm just like, I love bringing people together and like creating spaces for people to connect. I think it's something very near and dear to my heart. So being able to connect with a bunch of you guys through my videos and then connect you to each other and travel together for a week is just like so fulfilling and so much fun. So I'm getting really excited to go to Spain. I'm starting to work on my packing list. It's just going to be the best time ever. We're going to Ibiza and Mallorca. I know that it's Ibiza. I know that, but I just feel like an asshole when I say it. I can't tell if people want me to say Ibiza or Ibiza, because every time I see people talk about Ibiza online, they're like, don't be an asshole, just say Ibiza, you're American, shut the fuck up. And I'm like, okay, yeah, period. But then when I say Ibiza, there's someone out there that's like, you ignorant fuck, it's Ibiza. And I'm like, oh, my bad. I don't know. I feel very confused by the feedback I've witnessed online in the Ibiza versus Ibiza discourse. Okay. So you let me know how you think that I should be saying it. We're going there. We're going to Mallorca. And I am so excited to be in the place where it fucking happens, people. Love Island comes back in 3 days. From when you're listening to this episode, Love Island comes back in 3 days. Oh my God, I literally could not be happier. My skin is clear. My happiness levels are rising. Like, I can't ask for anything more in this life. To be in Mallorca while they're filming Love Island, just, you know, around the bend, down the road, it's gonna be so awesome. Just to, like, know that we're there breathing the same air. And I'm gonna be on the fucking lookout in that airport, bitch. I am gonna be scoping the scene, looking high and low for anything that could be incriminating. Anybody in that airport that looks like they could be a future contestant on Love Island, bitch, I'm gonna have my eye on you. I'm gonna be looking around. I'm going to be in that airport at baggage claim, at customs, just fucking scoping out the scene. Got to see if I can see any future Islanders at the airport. I don't know, waiting for a fucking car. It's waiting to be picked up from the airport. Perhaps I'll see one. Who's to say? We can't count these things out too soon, you guys. So I am stoked, to say the fucking least. I feel like it's been a while since I did a full episode dedicated just to audience submissions rather than throwing them at the end of the episode. And the box has been, I'm behind on the box right now. So I thought that we could go through, dive into some audience submissions. But first, I want to let y'all know that the first premiere draft of the Yearning Girls Worldwide playlist is live. The Yearners of the World, your playlist is here, and it's ready for your listening pleasure. Of course, I'm still accepting submissions for Lover Girls Worldwide and Yearning Girls Worldwide, but right now you can listen to both. So the link to the Yearning Girls playlist is going to be down in the description. It's up, it's live, and I hope you guys love it, because I love it. And I've been listening to it nonstop over the last few days once I threw it together. But anyways, let's get focused. Let's dive into these audience submissions. Okay, this one I wanted to talk about first, just because I super quick need to correct the record here and make sure everybody understands what I was saying when I said this. Somebody submitted and said, Maddie, I need to tell you this as a Brit. You actually will never hear a British person say, I love Americans, like ever, under any circumstances. I don't know what it is, but us British people have this thing where even if we like individuals who happen to be American, like obviously I love you, we all hate American people as a collective. It's like a cultural thing that I felt you would want to be aware of, considering you're always on your pro-Brit press tour during Love Island season. P.S. Don't worry, I still love you even though you're American. I just want to be clear here that I knew that. And that's what I was saying. I feel like there's a very mutual British-American beef that goes on. Americans aren't walking around saying, I love British people. That's just me, babe. That's me. I am single-handedly repairing the image of British people to Americans. Boots on the ground in American soil, bitch. That was me. I've been going to town repairing your image. I work for the Brits because of Love Island, okay? So I was just curious if there was anybody on the British side that was boots on the ground riding for Americans because of Jersey Shore, right? I'm fully aware of the beef, right? Brits don't like Americans. Americans don't like Brits, right? Except for me. Except for me, and I love you guys. You have great reality TV. But I'm like, Jersey Shore must have been the equivalent. Like, there must have been somebody over in the UK that watched Jersey Shore and was like, those Americans, I love them. They're fucking crazy. It's crazy over there. Like, that's what I do. There's got to be someone that was doing that. Like, who was running PR for America when Jersey Shore was running? Okay. Like, there's just, I just needed to know. So that's what I was saying. Not that I didn't think there was a beef or that I thought British people loved Americans, for sure aware of this very mutual beef. But I just think that if there wasn't someone boots on the ground running PR for America because of Jersey Shore, then there should have been, right? Because I think that everybody should be saying, I love the Brits over in America when the Love Island season is running. And you know what, to be honest with you, most people that watch Love Island here will say that. I feel like I hear other people who watch Love Island UK, like if I'm like, I fucking love British people, they're like, you know what? Me too. I love Love Island. Like, I can imagine. But the thing is, it's like, you know that that's going to piss off some British people anyways, where they're like, what, you like British people because of Love Island, because of like the worst people this country has to offer? And I'm like, yeah, that's the point. That's the exact trade-off with Jersey Shore too. I mean, you have like Jersey Shore, which I love Jersey Shore. Okay. I'm a Jersey Shore expert at this point. Ask me any question about Jersey Shore and I know the answer. I love Jersey Shore. The cast of Jersey Shore is not a great representation of Americans either. Nobody's saying I'm going to put my best foot forward. That foot is fucking Mike the situation. Like, nobody's saying that it's the best. It is. It is how you connect people with taste across the globe. You know what I'm saying? What Love Island has done to the UK for me and for many other Americans is huge. Love Island UK repairing British image overseas. It is. It's happening. And I just was like, I feel like Jersey Shore could have been the equivalent. Which I've heard from some that it was. And for those of you that entertained me and did say that it was, thank you. But, you know, if it so happens to be one-sided where it's just me and my Love Island UK American loving besties that are sitting here like, I love the Brits, and there aren't British people overseas being like, I love Americans when they think about Jersey Shore. Like, if I hear that it's only me doing that, don't worry, I won't take it personally. I'll just know then that you guys don't have any fucking taste. Because Jersey Shore fucks, okay? So I still love you, but I just need to know that you also loved Jersey Shore and was like, the Americans ate with that one. Because we did. Let's be honest. Yeah. But listen, I'm pro healing the American Brit beef. All right. We both suck. Let's be honest here. Let's be totally brutally honest. We are one in the same, babe. We are two sides of the same coin. So I fear we should mend the British American beef And just, I think that Love Island and Jersey Shore can be the bridge between us. That is how I feel.
Hello, Maddie. I have been a huge fan of yours for years, and your videos have helped me so much. The way you're able to talk so vulnerably and in-depth about topics society might deem as sensitive or taboo is very refreshing to me. I wanted your advice on how often you think you and your partner should ideally have sex. I know that having sex can mean a lot of different things, but you can answer this however you feel fit. Me and my partner have been together for over 5 years, and we maybe have sex once a month or less. I have always had issues surrounding sex, especially because of past partners who I felt did not respect my boundaries. My current partner is very respectful and always wants to make sure I am taken care of, but I am rarely in the mood. Neither of us really initiate anything, or when we do, one of us is usually not in the mood at the moment and we move on. It's gotten to the point that when we do have sex, it feels really weird and awkward at first. The issue also is that since we don't have sex often, I usually have a lot of pain and he finishes quickly, leaving both of us feeling bad. In general, I am happy with our relationship, but I feel like the lack of sex makes me question if our relationship is healthy since it's not what society deems as normal. I would love to hear your thoughts and opinions on this and any advice you might have to help not put so much pressure on it. Thank you for reading. Whenever I've thought about this, when I think about like my ideal relationship and how often I would want to be having sex within that relationship, I've always said that I ideally, in a perfect world, would want to be indulging in my sexuality with a partner most days of the week. But take note of what words I use to just say that, because I did not say I want to have penetrative sex most days of the week. That's a lie, and I don't want that. But when I say I want to be indulging in my sexuality with a partner most days of the week, that to me can mean so many things. So many things count as like sex or building up to sex, indulging in sexuality. To me, what I mean when I say I want to be connecting with my partner in a sexual way most days of the week, I mean that in the sense of like wanting to have a very sensual relationship, maybe like 5 days of foreplay and then one day of oral, and then maybe another 6 days of foreplay and then another day of oral, and then maybe let's throw in a penetrative day in there somewhere. But then maybe we go and we have 14 days straight of foreplay and we're never fucking, we're never like having penetrative sex. A lot of people might look at that and think that you're not, that I'm not having sex enough, but in my head, sex is not like fucking or not fucking, mutual head or not mutual head. Like I think sex can be so many things. And I think often the build up to sex, foreplay, is a kind of sex, that is really underrated. And I think days of foreplay are awesome. A week of foreplay is awesome. I think I care more about having like a sensual sexual relationship, having an intimate relationship, than I do like actually having penetrative sex. So like, yes, I want to have a very sexual relationship. Sex is a very important part within a relationship to me. But I think what that looks like can vary so vastly from person to person. And what I consider, you know, a very sexually active relationship, another person might look at and think that it's not enough just because I'm not having as much penetrative sex as somebody else does. You know what I mean? So I think that there's no like right or wrong amount of sex to be having in a relationship. Also, sex is complicated and we all have our own like histories with it and stuff that it brings up. And sometimes it completely unrelated, you might be going through something and your body might react a certain way, making sex more difficult for you and a partner. Like, sex isn't as simple as just like, I think you're hot, you think I'm hot, and now we're fucking and we're really into each other, so we do it all the time. Like, there's no, I don't think that the amount of sex you're having shows anything about like the richness or the complexity of your relationship. I think you can have a totally and completely rich and lovely relationship
and have sex not as often as other people might have sex. Every sexual relationship looks different couple to couple, and I don't think that there's any use in comparing your sexual relationship and what sex looks like within your relationship to someone else's. But if you're dissatisfied, it is worth looking into, right? Because you want to get into something that feels good for you and that works for you. But I don't think that we need to necessarily bring in comparison there. Like, I think it's okay to, you know, dig into what is or isn't working within our sex lives and decide what we want more of, what we want less of, and just reflect on it in that way. But I don't think the choices that you're making should be rooted in like, well, I want to have more sex because other people have more sex. I want to have more sex because I would feel more normal if I was having sex. Like, I feel like a healthy sex life can look a range of different ways, and wanting to indulge in sexuality with your partner more frequently, I think, is a totally fair thing to want. And it's something that I know that I would want as well. And also, I think as a couple, accepting that like sex doesn't always have to be penetrative sex, opens up a lot of doors in what like a satisfying and fulfilling sexual relationship can look like for the both of you. I just don't know how beneficial it is to judge yourself based on these like made up boundaries of what a healthy sex life looks like within a relationship. You know, I think that to me, so much of sex is foreplay. So much of good sex is the buildup. I would love to do like days of foreplay with someone before really diving into it. And foreplay is so much. Like, there's so much that can be counted as foreplay. Even like emotional intimacy is foreplay. You know what I mean? Having like being able to like sit on my couch, like sort of draped over someone, sharing a glass of wine, holding hands, they're playing with my hair, caressing each other. Maybe we don't have sex that night. Maybe we don't have sex that week, but just having that moment of intimacy and closeness and letting that be sort of like a part of foreplay in and of itself, I think is beautiful. And that would satisfy me. So I don't know. I think I just sort of look at sex within a partnership as being more of like a, I don't know, a constantly happening dynamic. And if we feel that it is like dead and it's like on and off and on and off rather than like usually coasting and then it goes up and down and up and down, and we have days where it's like really hot and heavy, and then we have other days where it's like more coasting, you know, a little bit of emotional intimacy, innocent physical touch, building up a role play, perhaps. Like, I don't know, whatever your thing is, whatever you guys like to do. I think most people would benefit from expanding their definition of what sex is and what it looks like and what a healthy sex life could be for them. And also, I feel like there's some missed opportunity for intimacy within the moments where we say we don't want to have sex for whatever reason, whether it's just like you had a long day at work and you don't want to have sex. Sometimes I feel like people take that rejection, or it's not even a rejection, take that like, no, I don't want to have sex right now because I'm not in that mental headspace, I'm not in that mood. People sometimes take that so personally and cut off the intimacy that can come as a result of like meeting our partners where they're at and listening to them. So if my partner doesn't want to have sex because they had an awful day at work, I can have the reaction of maybe taking that personally, being offended, being frustrated, or I can have the reaction of like, you know, taking a more emotional approach to showing up for them that night. Maybe we're not gonna fuck, but we can sit on the couch together and have like some physical proximity and connect emotionally and have a very like sensual and in other ways sexual evening without fucking. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like sometimes people get so wrapped up in like needing to fuck and like wanting to have penetrative sex that we miss out on the moments of like build up and connection that feel so sexy when they're added up in like just day-to-day life without actually physically having sex. I don't know. when I think about sex within a relationship, I think of something that is like ongoing, like a dynamic, a sexual energy that is being given back and forth. And sometimes that sexual energy amounts to oral or penetrative sex. Sometimes we're actually, you know, that sexual energy amounts to an orgasm. And other times that sexual energy amounts to other things. But it's still going somewhere. It's always being passed back and forth. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's how I see it. I don't think there's any right or wrong amount of sex to be having, though. Only you can figure that out and decide, like, how much sex do you want to be having? What would feel good for you in that department? And like, obviously, dealing with pain in sex is really frustrating. And if you haven't talked to a gynecologist about that yet, I would suggest doing that, because sometimes there can be reasons for pain during sex that they can help you investigate. But it's hard, you know, there's so much that goes into sex. You have to be gentle on yourself and be easy on yourself. People make it seem like it's a lot easier than it actually is, and being like, yeah, we fuck every single night and that just is what it is. First of all, I would never want to fuck that often. I am not interested in having frequent penetrative sex. If I have penetrative sex, I can't have penetrative sex the next day. I can't do 2 days of penetrative sex in a row. My body doesn't work like that. If yours does, congratulations. Mine doesn't. I can do penetrative sex and then oral the next day, and I don't even think I could do every other day for penetrative sex. I don't want that. Not even can I, because I don't physically think that I can, but I also don't want to. But that doesn't mean that I don't want to indulge in exploring a sexual dynamic with my partner. You know, I just think that we would all benefit from expanding our definition of sex. You know? And can I just say, when I was reading... I was reading this submission, I was having flashbacks to something embarrassing that I did one time a year ago. And, you know, I've thought about this multiple times too, but it's just so mortifying to me when I say something and people misunderstand me, and then I don't get to explain myself, which obviously right now I just explained to all of you guys sort of my view on it and what I would want if I was in a long-term relationship. Right. I was doing my friend's live podcast last year, and at some point during the live podcast, they had asked me this question and were like, if you were in a long-term relationship, how often would you want to be having sex? And my answer was, as I just said, most days of the week. And the audience had such a visceral reaction to what I said. Nobody agreed with me. Nobody was on my team. Everyone was like, oh, why, girl? And I remember being so flustered that that was the reaction that I don't think I fully explained myself the way that I just did. So you guys understand that I'm not saying I want to be fucked every day of the week. That would be crazy. Okay. I'm not saying that that's what I want to do. Though, like, I could explore oral most days of the week. That's not crazy to me. I'm also just thinking of like how often I'm exploring my sexuality solo, how many nights of the week I am masturbating, how many nights of the week I am exploring sexuality in a solo sense. And also knowing that my definition of sex is wide, okay? Wider than most, perhaps. So when I'm saying that I want to have sex with my partner, engage in sex with my partner most days of the week, when I'm saying it, it doesn't feel that fucking crazy. If I was saying I wanted to be penetratively fucked every night of the week, yeah, you can look at me and be like, shut the fuck up. But that's not what I was saying. I think about it often because I'm like, oh my God. Everyone in that room was like, what is wrong with her? Girl, don't lie. And I was so flustered. I was like, no. What I was going to say was... So I think I just said nothing, actually. I think I was so flustered at that reaction that everyone in that room just thinks that I genuinely want to have penetrative sex most days of the week in a relationship, which could not be farther from the truth. really is such so devastating. So devastating that I butchered that interaction. And, you know, I've thought about it multiple times. This isn't the first time that I've thought about that. I've relived that moment on multiple occasions and been like, I'm so embarrassed. I talked about that moment in therapy after it happened. I was like, oh, this is so embarrassing. Anyways, just brought that right back for me. So to answer your question, no, I don't believe that a lack of sex means a relationship is unhealthy. I think the sex is a complicated thing. It ebbs and flows, and figuring out what a healthy sex life looks like in your relationship is going to be different for everyone. And also, I think it's okay to be dissatisfied with your sex life within a relationship and work on exploring how it could be improved if that's what you want. Right? There's nothing wrong with acknowledging that you want things to be different if you want things to be different. But if you don't want them to be different and you're happy with how they are now, that's also fine. You know, I don't think there's a right or wrong way to have a sex life. It's just about what works for you and your partner. But comparison is, you know, the thief of joy and whatever else they say. So I would just try to take note of when you're comparing your sex life to other people's sex life and judging yourself through the lens of like what you think you should be doing versus assessing what your sex life is and asking yourself, like, am I satisfied with this? Is this what I want? Is this what I'm comfortable with? Like, if I want it to be different, how can we work on that? How can we change that? Rather than being like, is this what other people would want? Why do I want it if other people don't want it? Like, who cares what other people want? What do you want? Ask yourself what would feel best for you, and accept yourself wherever you're at with that. Sex is complicated. Don't be too difficult on yourself. Hi, Maddie. Love the pod. It's been getting me through a rough breakup. Rough as in I still love him and I'm scared I'll never find someone I'll be able to be that romantically, emotionally, and sexually vulnerable with him again. Anyways, I'm doing a little bit better than I was at the beginning. I no longer feel the constant need to text/call him, but I'm still missing him a lot. We never set a clear timeline moving forward. We agreed we didn't want to never talk to each other ever again and want to try to be friends potentially in the future. We still follow each other and he was still on my close friend's private story and be real, he was always the first viewer. Was that healthy of me to check? No. I went on a girls trip last week and I posted a night one pic of me looking hot as fuck. The next day I went to look to see when he viewed, again, probably not healthy, and realized he muted me on socials and removed me from Be Real. I know he probably did this because constantly seeing your ex doesn't help you move on, especially seeing them looking hot and having a fun time. However, this coupled with the fact that we broke up because he couldn't love me the way I deserve/want to be loved, worries me that he never actually liked/loved me in the 2-year flirty friendship and 1-year long distance relationship that we had. I felt like he loved/loves me, but my friends and the internet keep saying things like, if he wanted to, he would, and he would do that for the right person, but not for you because he didn't see you as the right person. Maybe I'm just an anxious girly, but I can't stop thinking that he hated me the whole time/never really liked/loved me. I never felt that way in the relationship. I just felt love and warmth. It hurts because I care so deeply for this person, and to think they don't feel the way that I do/did hurts even more. Also, since we never established no contact, when the fuck do I reach out to him? Because the whole never having him in my life ever again thing, it's excruciating to think about. We haven't contacted each other in 3 weeks today. Well, first of all, I just want to say props to you for going no contact because it is hard as hell and it is also the right choice. So you should be proud of yourself for doing that and sticking to it, even though it is hard, and know that it is the right choice. I did a podcast episode last summer, I believe, called If He Wanted To, He Would is Reductive, because I really believe it is so incredibly reductive. It views relationships as so one-dimensional and leaves very little wiggle room for like other truths to exist for why a relationship didn't work out. And I feel very similarly about he would do it for the right person, but you're just not the right person. Like, I think these statements are quite cynical and they view the ending of a relationship in the same kind of like cynical way.
where we're viewing the partner as someone who didn't actually care about you, who was a liar, who deceived you in some way, made you believe that things could be this way, but actually they can't, didn't actually like you that much and didn't have like the courage to tell you. Like they paint the partner in a very negative way, right? Now, there are relationships out there where these statements absolutely apply. There are some ain't shit ass dudes in the world, right? But not every ending fits within these parameters. These statements absolutely cannot apply to every relationship ending. Relationship endings are complicated. Breakups are complicated. Sometimes things don't work out and it doesn't make the other person a bad person. And you know, I think we've entered an era also where people will hear these things, these phrases, and will just sort of like spit them off at their friends. Like you think that that's what your friend wants to hear or that they should hear after a breakup, whether or not it's actually true or not. Because I think I have a problem with the way people feel so resistant to leaving space for relationship endings that aren't so like toxic and hurtful. Like, yeah, if he wanted to, he would, is so reductive. It takes away like so much of the nuance and color to the situations that happen within relationships where someone can't or doesn't show up the way we want them to. To just say, to put all of it on you and be like, well, if he cared enough, then he would. If he cared enough about me, if I was good enough, he would do this, which is crazy because sometimes it has nothing to do with you at all. Someone's like inability to show up or inability to commit, most of the time actually, has nothing to do with you. And it's not a matter of if they wanted to, they would. They might want to, but they might be going through their own set of circumstances, have their own traumas, have their own issues that prevent them from showing up for you in that way. It has nothing to do with you, though. And putting it on the individual, especially when you're trying to comfort your friend and be like, well, if you wanted to, you would, move on. Like, it's not that fucking simple. And also, especially because this person seems to mean quite a bit to you. You care about them a lot. This is obviously a sad ending, but you hope that you're going to be able to get to a point where you're able to reconnect and be friends at some point, which, listen, I understand. I relate to that. And to hear people be like, well, if he wanted to, he would, and paint him in such a negative light when you know that you're like, well, I actually don't have anything bad to say about him. This is painful and it's hard and it's difficult, but like, it was great and he made me feel so loved and I felt so amazing when I was with him. It didn't work out, but why do we have to jump to being like, and he was the worst, and if he wanted to, he would, and he didn't, which means he didn't actually care that much. And then you start to feel fucking gaslit where you're like, I lived one thing and I lived this relationship and I lived this connection and I felt like it was really quite wonderful. And now everyone's basically being like, well, because it didn't work out, none of that was real. None of it was true. It was all one big lie. And then you have to sit there being like, okay, so everyone is now making me feel like I'm an idiot and that I was being lied to and deceived and like he never really liked me that much. And that feels like shit. That feels like shit. So this is why I don't like these phrases, because I think they're reductive. I don't think they cover the wide range of experiences we have within dating. And I think more often than not, when you're saying these phrases to your friends and they don't apply, you are like cutting off your friend's ability to confide in you and be vulnerable with you. Because if you're just like, this is such a painful breakup and ending that I'm going through, like, I feel very attached to him. We're going no contact. That's going to be really hard, but I hope that we have like an ability to connect in the future. And you're reminiscing on like all the good times and how hard it is. And your friend's response to you is basically to be like, well, if he wanted to, he would. So guess he didn't. And that sucks. So fuck him. Like, we go down the fuck him route when it's totally unnecessary. Listen, I'm the first person to be like, fuck that man if a fuck that man is deserved. But when a fuck that man isn't deserved, going down that path just makes you feel like a fucking moron. It makes you feel like you were lied to, like you're an idiot, like you weren't actually loved that much, like it was all just one big like ruse and you got duped. Like, it does not feel good. When you say things like this to your friends and it doesn't apply, it feels like shit. So perhaps save the if he wanted to, he would's for the most ain't shit ass dudes you've ever met in your life. Okay. There are absolutely situations where these things apply, but I'm telling you, more often than not, it is more complicated than that. More often than not, it is more complicated than like some dude just sitting around like, yeah, I got this bitch and I keep her around and she wants me to like, I don't know, commit to her in a more intense way. And I can't do all that. It's just fucking, oh my God, women are crazy. Like there are dudes out there that are going to be like that. And you can look at those guys and be like, if he wanted to, he would. This guy fucking sucks. He's a loser. Fuck him. For sure. That applies sometimes. But to look at like every relationship that doesn't work out and be like, well, if he wanted to, he would. It's just not true. It's just not true. And sometimes things don't fucking work out. And there's a range of reasons why they don't that if he wanted to, he would, does not cover. And it only serves to make you feel shittier and doubt your own lived experiences. You know what your relationship was like. You lived it. You were in it. Let yourself be your comfort and solace there. You know what it was like. You know what you lived. It was beautiful. It was wonderful. It was what it was, and it is what it is now, and it is okay. You will be okay. You will get through no contact. It's going to be hard at first, but then you will settle into it, and I think you will know when you are ready to reopen the door to friendship. I think it takes a long time, though, like a long time, like longer than you think it's going to be. So I would just work on accepting the no contact, settling into the no contact, and committing to the no contact. Do not even think about the point in time far into the future where you can reopen a friendship. I don't think it's anytime soon, so we don't have to think about it right now. Right now, we're just going to focus on our healing, hanging around people that make us feel heard and listened to and loved, and, you know, do on our own thing for right now. You're doing the right thing by going no contact. I'm so sorry that so many people have given you such reductive advice and reactions to what you're going through, because it's totally unhelpful. And I just want you to know that we can hold space for something being beautiful and wonderful and making you feel so warm and loved, holding space for how beautiful it was in the ending without going to like a fuck him sort of place, without going to the if he wanted to, he would sort of place. There are a whole range of reasons why people can't be what we need them to be. And most of the time they have nothing to do with us. So we don't need to take it personally in that way. Hang in there. Stick to the no contact. I know it's hard, but it's all going to be for the best in the end. And I definitely personally relate to a lot of the feelings that you discussed in here, clearly, hence the passion. So just know that I'm right there with you. And I think that a lot of us would be better served to look at things with a little bit more nuance. The black and white thinking and like the, you know, you're either dating and you're together and he's great, or you break up and he's the worst person ever mentality is just like, it's not helpful. And it doesn't leave room for like the range of experiences that we have within connections, and also makes, puts like all the emphasis on actually being in a committed relationship, right? Like if you're not in a relationship, if you break up, if it wasn't forever, then it wasn't as great as you thought it was. And there had to be something wrong with it. Like I think that we can let things be beautiful and wonderful and like acknowledge when they've run their course, when things come to a close, when we no longer align, without it going to like a more negative place. I don't know. I just feel like those kind of quotes are for cynics. And I don't think that people who, romantics who crave nuance, I don't believe those phrases are for us. Unless it's like the most ain't shit ass dude in the whole fucking world, then for sure, go off. Go off with the if he wanted to, he would. But like, for most situations, I would say those phrases are super fucking reductive. And don't let it get inside your head too much. So, I'm getting married this year. My partner has two friends who are also getting married. I follow their fiancés on Instagram as we're pretty good friends and hang out with them as a group. Both women have been posting their journeys to their wedding bod, including updates on their exercise, meal plans, weight loss, etc. I don't subscribe to the whole wedding bod because I feel like you should just be yourself and look like yourself on your wedding day, and that aiming for the perfect body is unrealistic and setting yourself up for failure. I try to ignore it and just do my own thing, but recently have been struggling with my body image, and I can't help but think this has something to do with it. My body's recently changing the way my weight is distributed, as I am in my late 20s and my body is currently going through some changes. How do I get these thoughts out of my head or cope with my changing body and loving myself despite society's expectations on my wedding day? I agree with you so much on the wedding bod thing. I think it is so ridiculous and honestly so depressing to see people taking a day that is supposed to be about unconditional love, a day that is supposed to be about you entering a forever partnership with someone who loves you unconditionally in every way that you are and will be, committing to loving you no matter what. Your souls are side together. It is so beyond physical, bitch. To take a day that is supposed to be so full of like unconditional love and turning it into something that is so physical and so attached to a like fleeting physical figure that isn't even the one that you normally naturally have is so it's just so depressing to me. It makes me so sad for these people, and it makes me so sad for these relationships, to be completely honest with you. Like Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I don't like that culture. And if I were you, if I was in your position, it would impact me just the same way. I mean, the first thing I would do if I were you is mute those women. I get that you're not going to be able to unfollow them just because of the proximity to your fiance and the group dynamic of it all, for sure. But at some level, you've got to protect your peace, you know, and consuming that kind of content when you're not someone that subscribes to that bullshit, which thank God you're not, it is going to be harmful to you. It really does make me so sad to think about people being like in pursuit of a wedding bod. Like you get engaged and then you spend from the day of your engagement to the day of your wedding in pursuit of like a smaller body for your wedding day that obviously is not your body's like natural settling point, and it is you trying to change yourself for this one day, and then, you know, you'll go back to being a normal person afterwards. To put yourself on like a wedding diet is crazy. It's crazy. And it's so, I don't know, if I was getting married, if I was engaged to someone to be married and we're committing to life together, we're committing to love each other unconditionally, you know, today, in the good and the bad, when we're young, when we're old and wrinkly, like committing to love someone in all their forms. I mean, it would make me so sad if my partner was doing this. If I was gonna get married to someone and they were like on a mission to make themselves look different for a wedding, that would keep me up at night. I would be like, oh my God, I love you today. My love for you is like so much more powerful than physical. The physical is nothing, right? It's fleeting. Obviously, I'm fucking attracted to you. You're sexy as hell. But the physical, what we look like, how our bodies change, what we look like now, what we look like 30 years from now, none of it matters. Like, I'm in love with you today. I don't know. It just, to make love about our physical bodies just like is so supremely depressing to me. I don't know. It is icky. Anyways, if I were you, I would mute them and just try to protect your peace there a little bit. I think it's going to be harder to get those thoughts out of your head when you're consuming them so actively from other people that you are close with because of your fiance. And I think that just removing yourself from that equation and removing that content as being something you have to consume is going to be awesome. Like, the reality is that our bodies will change and do change throughout our lives. And like, part of what makes love so beautiful and wonderful is how so not physical it is. I would love you if we were specks of dust, okay? I would love you in every universe and every lifetime. Like, I hope that when we die, that our souls are just knotted together so intensely that everywhere we go, wherever we go next, we are together. If we come back, if reincarnation is a thing and we both come back as fucking bricks in a wall, I hope that my brick is right next to fucking yours forever. And isn't that so beautiful? Isn't that why we're here? You know, it's about the love. Nothing else matters. I am just dying to watch a movie right now. So I'm going to go. I'm going to go because I need to kick my little feetsies up and relax. I saw Hitman in theaters yesterday. And it was kind of floptina, I got to be honest. And I like Linklater. I've watched a lot of his movies, but Hitman was kind of floptina. And it's not that surprising because it's like so Netflix, but I'm like, it was ugly. It was a very ugly movie. It was not shot very well. The color grading was hideous. The locations were bad. Like, it just, everything was bad. It was all ugly. And I was like, is this just, it's like the Netflixification of Linklater. This is just like, okay, here it is. Uggo. Big Uggo. I gave it 2.5 because it was still entertaining, right? Both lead characters are ridiculously sexy and I did enjoy myself, but yeah, I can't say it was one of my favorites of the year. And I was at least a little shocked because I had heard great things. Everyone that I had known that had seen it, that I respected the opinion of, did like it. So I was sort of like, what was going on here? Because this movie is ugly. Kind of bad. Not bad. It was just okay. It was completely mid, but I think my expectations were a little high because other people said it was great. And also I really do like other Richard Linklater films. But anyways, I need to go cleanse my palate and watch something else, watch something new. So follow me on Letterboxd if you want to see my reviews. I do be logging everything I watch on there. And you can also follow me on Instagram at Maddie Drosbeck if you want to see more of me and also see more of my foster babies, because I have been posting them and little updates about them on my Instagram story. So with that, I love you guys so much and I will see you in next week's episode.
Okay, it's your truth or dare.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.